Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. This is MJ Network, MJ in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, and we have the author of The Handler here, and W.P. Woodward is, this book is fantastic. Meredith Marsdale is a case officer and a damn good one, even if this is the last mission did go terribly wrong. Expected to be fired, she is met by the deputy director with stunning news, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more. Good morning, and how are you? Welcome to MJ Network.
Oh, hey, good morning. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, this book was sent to me. They just sent it. They didn't tell me they were sending it, and I was really glad they did, because this is one of my favorites for the year. So that first scene really got me. How did you create the first scene and why? And how does that set the tone for what else happened? I always felt so bad for that poor mother.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, thank you, and it's great to be on. I appreciate it. The first scene is the prologue of the book, which set things in motion. And the genesis of it is a real-world event. I think it was on January 8th, 2020, the Iranians shot down by mistake a peaceful airliner. It happened to be a Ukrainian airliner. And it was filled with Iranian college kids going back to school in Canada, and they happened to be flying Ukraine Airways because they were going to connect through Kyiv. But the Iranians shot it down because they thought it was an American missile attack, mistakenly. And so when that happened, I thought kind of deeply about how the families of the people that had, you know, suffered such a tragedy would feel. And I wondered, like, well, what if someone was related? You know, what if one of the kids killed had a father or something like that was in the Iranian establishment? And, you know, how would that affect him? And that was really, really the idea behind it.
That was really so scary. I felt so bad for that poor girl, even though the mother wasn't crazy about the boyfriend, but what can you do? So
exactly.
You know, this is like, it was the second or third book before the Ukraine happened, which is criminal in itself. Well, how did you know to target the Ukraine? And tell us about Zana and Nadia. I like Zana. He's got guts.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so much that I targeted Ukraine. I mean, it did happen to be a Ukrainian airliner, but that is more coincidence than anything else.
Yeah, that's what I think.
What I was really targeting was the, how should I put this, the shadow war that's been going on between Iran and the U.S. For quite some time, and the way that the Russians tend to meddle in that. That was what I was thinking about. And as far as the Iranian characters go, I think you're asking about Zana and Nadia, the Iranian parents. I wanted to have people who were sort of middle-aged that had experienced enough of life to know what was valuable and also to have a sense of what was nonsense and to have a good sense of right and wrong and to really kind of question, you know, what they were doing and what the Iranian regime was doing. So I created this scientist who has been spying for the CIA because he doesn't like the Iranian regime. And I wanted to show that he's a guy with a normal life, just like you or I would have with, you know, a spouse and a child. And so when he loses that child, he decides it's finally time to act.
I don't blame him. He was brave to do that. Now, one of my favorite characters, seriously, I like John. And I really like John a lot. But I like Meredith, too. So how did you connect John Dale with Xana, and why did Xana need him? And he sort of like, you know, gave an ultimatum, I'm not going to do this unless you do this.
Yeah, I was one of the themes in the book, and I think in espionage in general, is the theme around trust. And whenever mm-hmm. there's someone who is an agent that is being run by a case officer, handler, that agent has put his life in that case officer handler's hands. And mm-hmm. there's a two-way trust thing happening there, where the case officer has to trust what the agent is doing or expose, you know, some operation. But the agent really has to trust the case officer that he's not going to get caught. And so I wanted John Dale to be the kind mm-hmm. of guy that an agent would be drawn to, that he would think was a genuine guy that he could trust. And so that when that agent, Xana, finally decides, I want to get out of here, I'm out, he really only wants to work with the original guy that recruited him, who he would trust, because he'd observed him in action. And Xana has additional leverage because he can basically say to the CIA, look, if you don't give me that guy, I'm gonna stop spying here, or I'm going to expose your network. I'm gonna make things tough on you, and there's not much mm-hmm. you can do about it. And that's what really made the CIA have to go get Meredith and recruit John, who is her ex-husband.
I like John, but he's really careful. Even though he gets blindsided a couple of times, but he's really careful. Now, Meredith is my other favorite character. She's got guts too. I like her. So tell us about her. And she had to be involved. Why is she now the handler? And what exactly is her role? Then we're going to get to somebody that,
Yeah, well, with Meredith, I wanted to portray a strong career woman. I've worked with many in my life, both in mm-hmm. the government as well as in private industry. And I've always found women like that to be super impressive, because they're managing typically a pretty complicated personal life, often doing more of the share of family jobs than the man. And they are also dealing with a lot of, especially in a place like the CIA, a lot of male egos. And so I wanted to kind of showcase that with Meredith. And also I wanted to show that Meredith really wanted, she has a strong sense of duty and honor and accomplishment and a strong sense of career. And she wants to earn those stripes. She wants to be recognized for her own merits, and she's very self-critical. So when the CIA comes and says, look, we want you for this mission, and she's thinking, oh, great, and then she learns it's to go get your ex-husband, she's basically offended, right? Like, hey, that's the most you think of me, and she's annoyed that they're mm-hmm. that they're using her personal life almost as a tool to get this guy back on board.
I don't blame her. I mean, she manages somehow, but yeah. Now, the guy that I had my doubts about is Rance. What is his role, and why do we get a feeling that I don't know about him?
Yeah, well, Rance is the director. He's Meredith's boss, and he's the department head for the counterproliferation division. And so he's a more senior executive. But like many more senior executives, you know, I'd say he's lost his way a little bit. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have his hands on the wheel as much as he used to, and he's a little bit morally compromised, but still very much a careerist. And so Rance's mm-hmm. driving motivation is really himself and getting to the next level. And he has a past with John Dale, because John Dale had worked for Rance at some point and questioned Rance's tactics. And so Rance is constantly in this situation where he wants to discredit both John and Meredith, and in that way more or less stands in the way of the mission, though he doesn't really mean to thwart it actively. He simply wants to protect his own career.
Yeah, I know. Now we have another interesting character. She's not good, people. We've got Genevieve. She's real smart. So who is she, and who are the members of the opposition, you know, the Russian side? And there's one guy that was really interesting.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to portray in the geopolitical sense the fact that the Russians do actively meddle in, you know, in affairs between, you know, the U.S. and Iran. And so to show that, and they also have a budding partnership, Russia has a budding partnership with Iran. And so I wanted to illustrate that geopolitically and show that the Russians would be more than happy to thwart anything the Americans were trying to do in Iran as a way to curry favor with Iran, almost in competition with China, who also wants to curry favor with Iran. And so the Russian spy agency is called the SVR. That is, not a lot of Americans have heard of the SVR, but it is the successor to the KGB's Foreign International Wing. And so the female character, Genevieve, her Russian name is Maria. She is an illegal spy in the U.S., and she is basically sleeping with the guy we were just talking about, Rance, and getting information out of stuff and then passing that back to the SVR. And then what I tried to portray is how that happenstance might then infect the operations that are happening in the Middle East. And so I showed the director of the Middle East area for the SVR, who's a major in Damascus, called Yuri Kuznetsov. And so together, Yuri Kuznetsov and this woman, Maria Genevieve, they work together to stop the Dales from achieving their mission.
He's interesting. Now, another interesting character, the Deputy Dorsey. So he has the power to reactivate John. But why was he not activated before, and where was he? But some people didn't want him reactivated.
Yeah, there's a controversy around John when he was a paramilitary operator in Iraq, where they were on some missions that John felt were not right, that were not morally correct.
Mm.
And so because of that, John basically started pushing for an investor, you know, an investigation into these things. And right around that time, he was captured and then escapes. And it turns out he escapes with an Iranian person. And so the way the escape went down, the CIA felt somewhat suspect and asked questions of John. And he basically got very indignant about it. He had already been indignant about the CIA. He felt that they were doing kind of the wrong thing. And so he taking some offense, he was a little evasive in his answers, and they therefore suspended him. And he more or less said, fine, go ahead, suspend me. I don't want anything to do with this anymore. And so Dorsey, the head of the clandestine services at CIA, has the power to do. He's the guy that runs the operations. And so he knows that John is critical. So he doesn't want to reactivate John, but he's going to do what he has to do in order to get that Iranian Zana to cooperate.
Now, this was interesting. How did you create Zana's name, Cerebrus, for the asset? And they had to do what he said. And he tell us about him and why he turned. We know why he turned. But how did you create that name for him? Because that's what they called him. Yes,
Cerberus. Well, I like the idea of using classical Greek names as cryptonyms. Mm-hmm. Cerberus is a two-headed dog that stands, I think, in front of the river Styx, right, and looks both ways into hell and one away from hell. And so that was the idea, was that Zana is looking in both of those directions.
That's interesting. Now, the character I have to tell you that I found my favorite, besides John and Meredith, I love Cassim. So how did you create him, and what is his role? I really liked him a lot.
Well, good. Yeah, he features very prominently in the second book in the series. But good.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. So Qasem is an officer in the Quds Force, and again, I don't think necessarily a lot of Americans know what the Quds Force is, but Quds is a Farsi word, is the Farsi word for Jerusalem. And the, mm-hmm. the Quds Force was established by a guy named Qasem Soleimani, a real world guy. The Quds Force is basically set up to go around and create armies to overthrow countries and, rid Israel from over there and that kind of thing. And so Qasem is actually the former adjutant to a real person, Qasem Soleimani. And his job is really to run Quds Force in that region. But he too is very much a careerist. And so the Russians know him. They've been working with him for a while. And the Russians contact him to sort of suggest that there might be this operation going that they're hearing about from Rance. And Qasem sees that as a career opportunity, as a thing that he can come in and direct and run, and he's got the contacts to go back and do that. But he's really in it for himself. He's less of a ideological Quds officer because he's lived in European capitals. You know, he's kind of learned to enjoy the finer things. He was educated at Oxford. So he's a rather special character and enjoys that special status. And I think ultimately his ego sort of gets the better of him.
Yeah, I know. I liked him, though. There's something about him that you can't really tell which side he's on. You don't know where he's going to go, which is even better. So
yeah, and that's something I've been doing a lot of in this second book is where is Qasem's real allegiance?
I was wondering that because I read. I'm not going to give it away. The last line of the book, I go like, okay, that's good. That lets me know there's going to be more.
Yeah.
Because I think it would be just, it's funny because the publisher sent me the book, then they sent me a second one, and my UPS guy saw me carrying it in the hall, and he took it out of my hand. He's going to read it.
Oh, good.
So,
good. Thank you.
Yeah, Wiz likes books, so ever so often I get my books from him, and I have to trade him. He won't give me my books unless I give him some, and this one he wanted.
Yeah.
So I'm excited that some. So how did you create the scenes, well, these were really good, with Rance and Maria, and does he ever realize he's being conned? Poor guy.
No, he doesn't realize it until, the final about quarter of the book. And so Rance, I guess I have as something of a theme, is that people's egos often get the better of them, and that is certainly the case with Rance, who thinks he's getting away with having an affair, and he thinks he's been careful because he's checked everything out and so on, but he's not. Mm. He's being targeted. And no, he doesn't realize it. There is a scene early on where he gets caught accidentally having the affair, but no one around them think that it has anything to do with spying. So he's told to stop it. And he's told to ship off because they think it will expose him to blackmail. But he thinks it's just an affair. He doesn't realize that he's being spied on.
And she's having a fit because she can't get in touch with him. So that makes it even better. So Meredith learns the truth. So how come she keeps it to herself? And where is John? And he gets home and he has this problem. How did you create the altercation when he arrives home? Because I got worried. I said, you can't kill him off. He just got there.
Well, Meredith doesn't know that Meredith had never seen Rance and the woman together. She only knew that there was a Russian person leading a team that was going around and chasing down, John, right? And John had seen her, et cetera. So Meredith and that woman, of course, do finally collide. John is always just basically one step ahead of her.
Which is good, thank God. So this really bothered me because I was worried about Nadia because Dana said that they don't give them the travel stamp. So they gave, why would they not give him the travel stamp? They gave it to her. And how does she finally get out? But he's like fuming because they're keeping him back. Because his boy is somebody else.
Yeah, that's because he is so closely tied to the nuclear effort that they had going on, especially at that time when there was an important conference with the Russians. So basically, Zana is indispensable to the Iranian uranium nuclear enrichment process. But you know that the Iranians, I think, are somewhat sympathetic to Zana because he's lost his daughter in a tragic accident that the Iranians caused themselves, and so they're at least understanding enough to know that his wife is grieving. And so they give her travel stamps to go to India to go to, effectively a yoga retreat. And as it turns out, India is filled with Shia Muslims, and so it's not uncommon for Iranians to travel to India. But they can't let Zana go because he's just needed.
Well, he works for a different person who is not so safe either, that guy. So he's got a problem too. So this I found interesting. No, most people don't understand what is yellow cake and what were the Russians really planning. You can't trust them.
Yeah. Yellow cake is the material that is mined to extract uranium. So it's basically dirt that has uranium deposits in it. And then I believe it is boiled down through a chemical process to leach out the uranium. And once the uranium is extracted, then that it is in its natural form, which its atomic weight is 238. So it's called U-238 on the periodic table. But if you can separate an atom from it with a centrifuge, basically you put it into gas and you use a centrifuge and you separate an ion, then it becomes U-235. And U-235 is of such a quality that it can then become fissile. And if you bombard it with force, it can set off a chain reaction. So uranium enrichment, whenever you hear about that on the news, is about people getting uranium naturally, which comes in as yellow cake, then being separated to form U-238, and then going through a centrifuge to become U-235. And once you begin enriching that U-235, you can get it to such a place that there's a difference between low enriched uranium, so it's like maybe only a small portion of it is U-235, and then highly enriched uranium where it's mostly U-235. So that yellow cake is just more or less the start of that process.
That's scary. Is it very and it's radioactive? That would be even scarier. Go on.
Yeah, it's certainly radioactive once it gets down to that form, yeah.
Oh, God. So these were interesting. Who were the 12th Ayman, and what was their goal? I mean, there's more people involved in this than ever.
Well, the 12th Imam is a belief by a really hardcore sect of Shia Muslims. In Iran, and many of these folks have been in the Iranian government as hardliners, and they believe that there is a 12th, what they call a 12th imam, and an imam is like a holy man, like a priest, a kind of combination between a priest and a saint, I'd guess, and that this 12th imam is actually, been in hiding since for basically 500 years. And when that 12th Imam comes out of hiding, it is the signal that it's the end of days. Now, this is very unfamiliar to us and our Judeo-Christian principles, et cetera. But that's what the 12th Imam is. And so people refer to folks that have those beliefs as 12ers, and they tend to be the most devout and radical of the Iranians in the Islamic Revolution.
That's scary. So who is Putov? I don't like him either.
Well, Putov's simply Yuri Kuznetsov's deputy. And so he's just a guy that's always around helping out, more or less.
Okay, now we have another guy that really creates a lot of problems. Because not only does he create problems for Poison, he creates problems for Rance, Javed. He's no great person either, his boss.
No, what I wanted to show is Javed was a guy that would be fervent, kind of like a 12er. And so, he's Zana's immediate boss. And as I imagined it, the Iranians would have someone who is really devout ideologically in charge of people like scientists, even though they're not, you know, maybe great scientists themselves, they're there to make sure that people stay in line. So I wanted to have that tension between Zana and his boss, Javed, who is more ideological.
I don't like him at all. Then we come to another guy. The Iranians really want to play a very big role. So who is Vasily and who is Oleg? I don't like them either. Well, Oleg I'm not sure about, but Vasily, yeah, definitely not.
Well, I wanted to show folks from Russia that were, you know, behind the scenes carrying out missions. There's this, most people have heard of the commando group called Spetsnaz, and there's this group within Spetsnaz called Spetsnaz Alphas. And those are the guys that, you know, slip into countries in civilian clothes and do bad stuff. And so, for example, when Russia annexed the Crimea in 2014, they slipped, hundreds, thousands, Spetsnaz Alphas as civilians secretly into the Crimea to help take it over. So as I had this opposing force on the Russian side, I needed trigger pullers who were Spetsnaz Alpha, and Vasily and Oleg are two of those guys.
So now we come to this scene that was really scary but really amazing. Okay, Meredith gets kidnapped, but how did you create the scene between her and Maria or Genevieve? I was like, whoa. I was getting worried there. I said, wait a minute, he can't kill off the main character. That would really not be great.
No, well, I wanted to show Meredith, I wanted to give her an opportunity to be tough, you know, and to do something physical, and for the reader to feel both the fear that she might fear and also root for her and root for her courage in standing up to a really tough threat. And so that was more or less the genesis of that scene.
I clapped and clapped and said, oh God, I was getting worried. I go like, wait a minute, you can't kill off the main character. One of the authors actually did. And when I interviewed him in March, I was really upset because he killed off the main character's future husband. I was like, why did you do that? Well, because I wanted to, I was really not happy.
Yeah,
it's sort of like,
it's kind of
kill. I cried too.
Yeah, it's you have to think about which characters you want to make sure survive for your next book. And in this, when I was going through the editing process, for example, my editor, he wanted to make sure that Rance, as an example, survived. Like, he wasn't so damaged that he couldn't be used in the next book. And so I actually made a few modifications to make it so that, you know, while Rance didn't perform admirably, he also, you know, he didn't die, and he wasn't so shamed that he would be fired, things like that.
Are you bringing Zana back? Was he gone? I like him though.
Well, I don't know if I should tell you. I would say he's not prominently featured.
Okay. No, I tend to not say anything to anybody. I'm terrible. So, Zana was able to manipulate events. How did he have so much power? That's what really is so cool about somebody with power like that. You want to have it yourself.
Yeah, well, I think knowledge is a precious thing, and there are only so many people at that level that can run something like a gas centrifuge array. And so being a physicist and computer scientist, that's who Zana was. And so he had specialized knowledge, and was important to that operation. And you have to think, too, that I didn't really bring this up much in this book, but, you know, the Israelis have been assassinating these Iranian scientists on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
The centrifuge array that's depicted in the book is actually a secret array that's underground, and we know the Iranians have those. We know their trouble, etc. But it makes Zana all the more indispensable because, you know, he needs to come and go from there somewhat in secret. It's not like they can have thousands and thousands of these guys. There's only so many guys that are smart enough to know what they're doing, and there's not an endless supply of them. And so that, by its very nature, gives Zana that kind of power.
That is really cool. How did you decide where this novel takes place? There's so many locations in this novel, and why? I mean, I looked some of them up. I said, well, some of them I never heard of, some of them I did, and I'm pretty good at that as an educator. But so how did you decide where each scene takes place?
It's about Iran, right? And so there's activities happening there. And then there's activities around the Middle East surrounding Iran. And so the Russian activities for that area of the world in terms of espionage really center in Damascus and to a lesser sense, Beirut. So I involved those. And then the Americans, I wanted to locate in a number of friendly countries, whether it was Dubai or Bahrain or other Gulf Arab states that are more friendly to the U.S. So those are featured prominently. And then the one that is a little bit of a curveball is really India. And I brought in India because I've been there a couple times as a businessman. And I just thought it is so kind of chaotic and exotic that a chase scene or something like that would be really interesting there visually, and that it seemed plausible to me that if an American wanted to extract, you know, an Iranian, that Iranian could get to India because there's so many Shia Muslims there, and then India is a very open country that's really hard to control.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of infrastructure, so it would be kind of an ideal place for something like an exfiltration. So that's why I had that one, and the rest of the countries are more or less adjacent to where the action is happening, like the train from Turkey into Iran, for example.
A lot of the authors are going to India and Turkey now, a lot of them, so I'm impressed. A lot of them do, and I wonder, I get worried when they, not so much Turkey, but India, when they go to visit. As a matter of fact, my cousin wants to go there. If the pandemic ever ends, that's one of the countries she wants to see. I don't know. So John has to get out, and he has to do something. Tell us about the SEALs and why he wasn't thrilled to have them as an active role, but how did he get to work with them, and how come he got them and nobody else?
Well, John had hoped to exfiltrate off across the border quietly and silently, and the SEAL teams were really being held in reserve in case anything went wrong, because, you know, no senior American official would want to actually invade a country and start a war, right? It's meant to be a very quiet, low intensity operation. But when John shows up at that border to try to get across, you know, he's interdicted by the Russians and by the other Iranians that are chasing him down. And so it becomes this pivotal moment where, to save him, you know, the SEALs have to launch into action to go get him. So that's the idea there.
Now, Qasim plays even a bigger role in this. What else does he have to do? And who is Zoran? I have the book in front of me.
Zoran, remind me, Zoran.
I'm looking at the book, and I just found him. He's in the militia of some type.
Oh, okay, yes. So one of the things I wanted to depict was that the Kurds are an interesting group across the Middle East because they strive for independence, and so they fight against the governments of Turkey, and they fight against the governments of Iran, and they basically want an independent Kurd state. And when Zana was escaping Iran, it seemed plausible to me that one ally that he could use to help get out of the country would be the Kurds that are not friendly to Iran. So Zoran was a Kurd leader that Zana ended up approaching and worked with to get across the border.
Now, before I forget, I have 3 more shows this month, and then I'm taking off the month of July, finally. I am triple booked in August, September, October, and November, till the end of November. So if anybody out there has somebody coming out, you better tell me now, because November's filling up, and December is in. I have a few for February of 2023 already, which is amazing. So Monday, New York Times author Tess Gerrinson takes the spotlight with her new book, Listen to Me, It's a Rizzolian Isles. On the 29th, Cindy McDonald, Double Dog Dare. And on the 30th, Rod Bates. He's making up the show because his wife had COVID. Murder is not a girl's best friend. And I start back on August 2nd. I'm actually going to take the month off. It should be fun. I get to do more books. Maybe even write one. Who knows? You never know. So this book really kept my interest. I couldn't, like, put it down at all. And how did you create the final scenes and the revelation? What happens to Rance? Well, not too much, tell him.
The final scene I had in my mind from the beginning, that it would be interesting to have 3 different forces, like the Russians, the Iranians, and the Americans, all converging on the same spot, all trying to get this person. Mm. And so that was the scene I envisioned. And what I wanted to display was a little bit of the chaos of operations. So if you look at that scene, it stretches from the Americans in a forward operating base in eastern Iraq, and then the other people in Iran. And eventually the Americans realize this is going to go bad, and so they launch their military forces to go take care of it. And I really wanted to try to portray the way each side might be thinking the wrong thing. Like each one had limited information and was drawing the wrong conclusion, such that everything they were doing were a little bit off. And that was something I tried to show. And then in the end, you can have a revelation because they finally realize what was happening.
Now, before I forget, I cannot ask this one. John and Meredith, what happens when they come face to face? Is their relationship going to change, or is she going to tell him to go take a hike again?
Well, you saw the last line of the book.
I'm not going to say what the last line says. It was interesting.
A theme of John and Meredith's relationship is that while they're not still married and while they're not still technically romantic, they've been linked by a life together. You know, they share a daughter, they share a common understanding. And so I wanted to portray that idea that a bond between these people would transcend circumstance. And so Meredith's in a big hurry to really make sure nothing bad happens to John, and John would be the same way. And I liked kind of playing with the idea that Meredith, while she's there to do this mission for the U.S. and for the CIA, she's also really there to protect, you know, her ex-husband. So that was my thought process on those guys.
So who were the people of the SEALs that helped him? Was he disappointed in them? Did they really come through for him when he needed them?
Oh, yeah, I don't think he was disappointed in them. I think he was happy they came through because he found himself, you know, surprised. So no, I don't think he was disappointed with them at all.
Well, that's good because, you know, he didn't want them. He asked for everybody else but he seems to have a lot of power. So, Xana, I love Xana. What happens when Xana and John finally meet in person?
First of all, Xana and John, yes, they finally meet in person. Their relationship previously had been cloaked in difficult secret communications, and so John had only learned of Xana's actual identity, you know, pretty late on in the book. So when he finally meets him face to face, I think he's just relieved that he's found this person that his mission has been to go get, and that they've got him.
I don't know, it's amazing that he would, you know, that they lasted so long. It's amazing that he got through. So, who are you? I don't want to give away too much, but I'm going to ask some more questions about it. How did you decide to create this type of a plot? I read the book and I'm going like, I feel like I'm watching the news again. And what's happening in the Ukraine is horrible. And of course, Putin thinks that he's an innocent, doesn't even care. He's justified to do anything he wants. It's scary that they don't try him as a war criminal for what he's doing to these poor people. He just feels so justified. So how did you create, why did you decide on the Ukraine, and how did you, you made it so realistic. I felt like I was living it.
Well, good. I'm glad. I think I was in, as a writer, I have been influenced by historical fiction, which is a genre I've always really loved. And so some books like, say, Winds of War or War in Remembrance or Once an Eagle, those are all kind of World War II books. But while they explain what happened in history, the stories are told by people who are lower in the pecking order. And by seeing those kinds of people as they're in action, you as a reader feel like you've lived it a little bit. And so when I wrote this book, I thought, well, it's not really historical fiction because it's closer to current events, or you might even call it very, very recent historical fiction. I think a lot of authors try to predict or do a what-if scenario, you know, so some people might try to write about, a Taiwan-China war, you know. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't actually happened. And what I wanted to do was to write about a conflict that has actually happened and then create a fictional drama behind it where the reader could imagine, hey, yeah, maybe that is how that really went down. And it's recent enough that the reader remembers it. You know, it's not 100 years ago. So that was that. That's my thought process, and that's just how I felt comfortable writing it. And I couldn't really tell you why. It's just how it came out for me.
It's funny because your book dealt with what happened on that flight that was horrible, and Don Bentley wrote one also about the Ukraine, and somebody else. I'm going, and this is way before it even happened. I said, it's almost as if somebody was like psychic and said, oh, my God, this is going to really happen. And when it really does, it's like it hits you like, oh, my God, these books are going to be so, so popular because everybody really wants to know something more about the Ukraine. So tell us a little bit about, there's another character in the book, Oleg. What part does he play?
Well, Oleg is one of those Spetsnaz alphas, and I wanted to have at least one of those characters where you got to see a little bit more of his struggle and what he was going through to impact the mission. Something that was important to me was trying to keep things realistic. And so, look, while it's fiction and characters do things that, you know, that one character can do things that maybe in the real world it would take two or three people to do, I never wanted any of these folks to be like superheroes. And so I liked the idea of showing a guy like Oleg trying like heck to get across Iran to this place, you know, and having to drive kind of a crappy car and having to figure out where he was and having to, you know, be short of food and all those kinds of things to show that it's not easy for them either. And they're also very dedicated to their mission.
That's amazing. It's hard, you know, because if it's too, if everybody wins too fast, or the main character gets what they want too fast, I go like, that can't possibly happen. No, nobody has, if without obstacles and flaws, the story would not be real. Would not. So who is Dale, and what part did he play?
John Dale?
Dale.
Well, Dale is John Dale, the lead protagonist. Yeah, and you know, he's the one that has the special relationship with Zana, and so has to go to Iran to get him. And John's condition is such that he doesn't want to work for the CIA anymore. He's found his niche. He's sort of retired early and pretty comfortable doing what he's doing and looking to put some peace back in his life. So when his ex-wife shows up and asks him to please come back and do this thing for her, he's extremely reluctant. But of course, then he himself is threatened somewhat inadvertently and almost has to jump into it as a matter of saving everyone's bacon.
How does he feel? Because she's sort of the handler, and he has to stay in touch with her. She has to be able to get in touch with him, and sometimes she's having a fit because he doesn't answer. So how does she deal with that? That's hard.
Yeah, and that's tension in their relationship is the fact that she's kind of a company person and relies on official communication channels. And her ex-husband, John, is simply not like that and doesn't want to do those kinds of things. And so he doesn't trust. And because he doesn't trust, that drives Meredith a little bit crazy.
Well, how come they split up to start with?
Because John had spent a lot of time in paramilitary operations in Iraq, and that had... And then had gotten captured and escaped and questioned. And he effectively had a fair amount of rage at the system. Mm. And that was something that he was having a hard time overcoming. And she got tired of it and didn't want to deal with it anymore and so asked him for a divorce.
Does she ever worry about the safety of their daughter? Do they ever worry that someone's going to try to come after her because of them?
I think they would. Generally, but they also try to be very careful about not exposing their family life. There is, I would think that in modern technology and social media, that it would be nearly impossible to completely obscure your family. And so I do have that come up a little bit where, you know, the Russians basically find out who Meredith is by searching names and coming up with, you know, a daughter and tracing it back from there. But I also think there's, particularly with the Russians, there is still a measure of professionalism where I don't think it would make sense that they would just go and target the daughter. These are still professional intelligence agencies trying to run a mission, and it would seem to me that doing something like that would be a tactic that wouldn't go well. Now, you can see in another book where there's terrorists or folks that have less professional ethics, where they would certainly go and do that. But I didn't want to introduce that in this book because I wanted this to be a challenge, a struggle between professional intelligence agencies.
I was also glad that you didn't bring in the President of the United States and everybody else. I just sort of kept it located in one area. Because so many books that I've been reading, they've been bringing in this one and that one. After a while, it doesn't become real. It's like, so what? It's like another war.
Well, I'm glad you said that because when I set out to write this and started with a story outline and synopsis, something I was very deliberate about was to try to keep all of the characters down at a low enough level that they wouldn't be in the halls of power, you know. So they're acting out policy decisions certainly made by senior politicians, but you know, I think it's very hard as an author to depict the President of the United States. You know, nobody's been the President of the United States, right? I think these mid-level characters, you know, you can make them in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, and they've got kids at home or money problems or relationship issues. And that was really something that was important for me, was to keep it at the characters at that level.
Well, you did. Let me tell you, your publicist, first it was Peter, but Peter came second. There was somebody before Peter. And I was like, oh, this is great. And I get books all the time, and I never know what I'm getting. And sometimes it's like a pleasant surprise, and sometimes, like yesterday, it was a why am I reading this kind of book, 'cause I have to interview the person. And I was like, I couldn't put this down. And it's a lot. I'm a speed reader. And my mom made me read 10 books a week, besides everything else I had to do, besides getting 100 on every test, so I had to write it over, seriously. So when I got this book, I just sat down and read it, and I couldn't put it down. And, of course, Eye Strain, it was worth it. Trust me, it was definitely worth it. So what's next, and who are you bringing back without giving away too much, especially the last line, Can't Tell Them?
Yeah, what's next is, if you think about where the next book really picks up where this one left off. And if you think about what happened there, Meredith is the central character, and she has made a decision to keep Qasem, and Qasem has offered himself up as a spy. And so the next book is really about the tension between Meredith and Qasem, as she realizes she can't trust him necessarily to spy. And then a few things happen that really put Meredith in a bad position. And so it's that struggle that she runs that really goes into the next book.
When is it coming out, so I have you in my schedule?
I've been doing
this for 12 years, and I can't believe it.
It will be out in, we don't have an official date yet, but it should be May of 2023.
They better send it to me so I get it, so I can put it in my schedule, because, I mean, in all the years that I've been doing this, I mean, Partners in Crime is the one that keeps me busy with their tours. They're the best. There's nobody better than them. And I never have to worry about ever having a day to do anything. So, and then of course, when Peter asked about you, I go, like, I don't have anything till November, and I don't normally do 3 shows in a week, but I couldn't resist this one, ever. I couldn't. I said, okay, I'll do 3 this week. I actually did one on Monday with an FBI agent, and we talked about gun violence, gun control regulations, and because I'm an educator for a million years, school safety, and how they need to do better than to protect their kids in school. So that was powerful on Monday, too, and this one I was looking forward to. So where can everybody get this one? And I can't wait to get the next one. Do you have a title for the next one?
I do, but I'll start with this one. So this the book we've been discussing is called The Handler. It's available wherever you buy books, so obviously Amazon, Audible, Kindle, and your local bookstores, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. And my name is M.P. Woodward. So if you want to search for that, it's M.P. Woodward. And the next book, I do have a title, actually. It's called Scorched Earth, and will be out next year.
Well, I hope that I get it, because this has been the highlight of my day, let me tell you. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I don't know, do you do panel shows, too, or just do individual interviews?
I have done panels as well, yeah.
My topics for panels are different. Actually, I'm doing one in November because kids are watching programs that are too violent. And as an educator, you know, video games and programs and all these video, all these other things on television. So we're talking about how the complexion of television has changed and made things more violent. That's one of my ideas for November. So thank you so much. This has been great. Everybody have a great day. Please stay safe. Thank you so much for doing this, and bye.